Now, the story behind this call is very simple. We send out a worldwide online survey, and that link was pointed to AskHarvEcker.com. And to date, over 1,000 questions came pouring in from all over the world. There were some questions that were overlapped, and there were many questions that were dealing with all different topics dealing with money. And we pared it down to 7 different categories. And if you have your cheat sheet in front of you, you see them right there. It's on. It starts with page 1 and it goes to page 5. And let me give you the address one last time. If you just joined us, it's www.askharvecker, that's H-A-R-V, as in Victor, EKER.com/notes.pdf. And the 7 categories that were that just leaped out at us were topics about the financial thermostat that Harv talks about and which he'll be talking about tonight, wealth conditioning, rich thinking versus poor thinking, money victims and how to recognize if your friends are one or if you're one, the prosperity focus, debt elimination, and how the rich measure wealth differently than the poor and the middle class. And so I had mentioned earlier that I read his book, Secrets of the Millionaire Mind, in one sitting. It's a very simple read, but I do recommend that if you get the book, you read it once just for the content, twice to study it, and a third time to start implementing what is inside, because it will change your life, and it's a very hot topic. Money changes lives, and it can also ruin lives, and Harv will be telling us more about that in about 30 seconds when we begin. But let me tell you this. Get out your note sheets right now and get ready, because we are on with T. Harv Eker. Harv, welcome to the call.
Thanks for having me.
Where are you calling in from today?
I'm in New York for the book launch.
Oh, tell me what's been happening the last few days, because there's been a lot of hoopla about the book, and I know you've sold thousands, and they're barely into the bookstores yet.
Yeah, they've only been in the bookstores for maybe a couple of days, and the interest, at least in the United States, they've been out there for about a week or so in Canada. But it's really interesting because, who would have known? You think that on the book launch date, that the book launch is, that the bookstores are going to just have it, they're going to break out the boxes, and there they are. Well, it doesn't quite work that way. The real world takes its toll, and so some of the bookstores have them, some of them don't. People are calling in like crazy going, I can't get one at the bookstore, what do I do? And so, I say, well, just wait another couple more days, and I'm sure it'll be there. So, we're just doing the best we can. But, this morning I did something really interesting called a radio satellite tour. I'm not sure if you've ever done something like that, Alex.
It's really interesting. You stay in one place and you go all over the world, don't you?
Basically, yeah. I had 18 radio interviews in a matter of about 3 hours.
Wow.
And I sat in one chair and I had this conference call person kind of call the radio stations that were all pre-set up. And every one of the interviews was 9 minutes. There's about a minute in between, and then you go into the next one. And it's really great because, what was really funny, Alex, is that, and I think it's a good lead into this, because everyone involved in this said, Harv, you are going to be absolutely exhausted by the end of this thing. You're going to need a nap. You're going to need to go get a massage or something. And you know what happened? I got stronger as it proceeded. That my interviews at the end of the time were stronger than the ones at the beginning. That's how much I believe in what we're talking about. When you actually see and witness people's lives changing in front of you, it's a lot easier to be passionate about something. And when you've come from the place that I've come from, which is I wasn't born rich or anything like that, and I developed this method to help myself and now help thousands and thousands of other people, I think it makes a difference. When you really come from the other side of things and can really be coming from the place of where the audience is, and because you were one of them at one point in time, and I just think that makes a big difference. And I just feel, ask me how I'm doing, I feel really blessed. That's the best word I could say. I feel totally blessed that I'm able to do this. I'm able to really help people make a substantial and fast difference in their lives.
Well, after reading the book, I realized that you've made an impact on over 250,000 lives, and you're still going strong. And before we begin with the first question, I'm just going to read a quick excerpt from the first chapter in the book, because the title of the chapter is interesting. It says, who the heck is T. Harv Eker, and why should I read this book? I mean, that's a pretty good question. And you start by saying that people are shocked at the beginning of your seminars, because one of the first things you tell them is, don't believe a word I say. Now, why do you suggest that, briefly?
well, you know, whose experience can I come from? You know, I can only come from my experience, and that's not true, and that's not false, and it's not right, and it's not wrong. It just makes it my experience. All I can let you know, however, is that the information that's in that book and in the seminars totally transformed my life and have now transformed the lives of literally thousands and thousands and thousands of other people. And if people are willing to use them, I believe they can transform your life too. So all I can suggest is that, you know, try the material out, try the principles out in your own life. And whatever works for you, you keep on doing. And whatever doesn't work for you, you're welcome to throw it out. And Alex, the truth is, people don't really want to be told what to do. They just want to have some options, and like myself, try them out and see what happens in the real world. I know for myself and through thousands of my students now that the principles that we work with here really work in the real world. But that doesn't mean anything to anybody on this line if they don't themselves experience it for themselves.
Oh, amen to that. And let me go back and rewind about 2 weeks. We send out a worldwide survey that went to AskHarvecker.com. We wanted to make this call as Socratic and dialogue-based as possible, so the content came from the listeners and not just from us. And the question there is very simple. It's still up, and there's a picture of you, Harv. And it says, what's your single most important question on how to discover the secrets of your millionaire mind and master the inner game of wealth? And I guess there is an inner game and an outer game, but the number one question that came in, especially from those people who know you, is they want to know more about the financial thermostat. So that's the first question on the cheat sheet. It's on page 2. Please go there if you have the cheat sheet printed in front of you. And as far as the financial thermostat goes, what is the money blueprint that you talk about? When was it formed? How do we change it? And why is it so important in improving our financial literacy? It's a very important question.
Well, you know, probably, Alex, the easiest way to explain the money blueprint is, have you ever heard of a set point when it comes to people's weight?
Yeah.
Well, you know what? We have a physiological set point that governs our weight. And in exactly the same way, we have a financial set point that governs our money, our wealth, and our income. And what people don't realize is that it is this money blueprint or this set point that will determine your financial life. You can know everything there is to know and have all the knowledge in the world about your business and about your job or about investments. But if your financial set point, if your money thermostat isn't set for a high level of success, you will never, ever, ever, ever create wealth. And if by some lucky chance you do, you will most likely lose it or you will sabotage it. So it is essential that people realize, you know, that, you know, the people who are on this call, Alex, I really believe that, you know, they're very fortunate because they have dropped into or hit on the root cause of financial success. This is the jackpot. You can, you know, I spent years and years studying books and listening to tapes and even taking seminars, money management, marketing. It was all wonderful stuff. But you know what? I never really could use it. It was great, but it wasn't great for me. I just wasn't doing it. Why? Because we're creatures of habit. We're creatures of programming. And there are certain things that we're programmed for doing and certain things that we're programmed for not doing. And that comes from the past. And that's basically how people's blueprints are formed. You know, a good example of this blueprint thing, if you give me an opportunity to say it, is the difference between Donald Trump, for example. Here's this multi-billionaire who loses everything and more. And a couple years later, he's got it all back again and more. Why? Because his money blueprint is set for high levels of financial success. Now, take the contrary side. Let's talk about lottery winners. They win $5, $10, $50, $100 million. And you know what? A few years later, half of them are broke again. Why?
That's documented, right?
I mean, absolutely.
It's actually documented in literature that that's the case, and it's unbelievable, but why does it happen?
Because their financial blueprint is absolutely set for low. So again, you can know everything about marketing and business and real estate and stocks, but if your financial blueprint is set for low levels of success, nothing you do is going to make much of a difference until you actually go in there, identify, and change that blueprint. The blueprint's like a temperature gauge. It's a financial thermostat, you see. And so, you know, put it this way. If the temperature in the room is 72 degrees, there's a good chance the thermostat is set for how much? 72 degrees. And until you actually change that thermostat, you'll remain at 72 degrees. Now, if that's what you like, great. But what if you want to go to 110? Well, you're stuck, because every time you open the windows and it'll be hot in there, the thermostat's going to kick in and drive the air conditioning on and drive it back down to 72. You're almost, you know, prisoner of this robotic thermostat set point that runs your financial life.
So when one of your wealth principles in your book is your income can only grow to the extent you do, is that what you mean? We got to grow before our thermostat rises? Is that what you mean specifically?
You know, let me give you my own example and you tell me. I mean, really, here I was. I came from a background where I, you know, my parents weren't rich at all. They came from Europe. They came with $30 to their name, no suitcases, the clothes on their back, that's it. In fact, in order to smuggle in the $30, they actually hollowed out a French loaf of bread. So they chose to have the $30 and the crust of bread instead of having a full loaf of bread. That was their choice.
Okay.
And you know, they came here with absolutely nothing. And so when I grew up, money was very, very important in our family, of course, because it meant survival, right? It meant security. And so I grew up with money so important. And so while all the other kids wanted to be astronauts and baseball players and firemen and policemen, I just wanted to be a millionaire. And it was really important to me to have money. And so here I was, doing everything I possibly could. I learned all the marketing, I learned all of the real estate methods, everything everybody's got to teach. I'm learning everything, and sure enough, I'm in 12 different jobs, 14 different businesses, and what's my end result? Nothing. Nada. It was like the Loch Ness Monster. I had heard of this thing called profit. I just never saw any of it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so I was one of these people who really, now some people don't care about being rich. I really cared. And I cannot tell you, Alex, how frustrating that was for me. I felt low, you know. I felt like my whole, you know, self-worth was at stake here. And so I was very fortunate that I met up with this multimillionaire who gave me some wonderful advice. He said, Harv, why are you reinventing the wheel? If you want to get rich, what you need to do is simply do what rich people do. And so I said, well, what the hell do they do? And he said, well, study rich people and you'll know. And so there I was. I go ahead and I studied rich people like to no end, and sure enough, I studied especially rich business people because that's what I wanted to do, and in my very next business, I make $1 million in only 2.5 years. And I'm on Easy Street, right?
Mm-hmm.
I wish.
Mm-hmm.
2 years after that, what do I got? Nothing. I'm right back down to where I started, almost to the exact dollar that I started with when I first began. And that's when I realized that this blueprint, because I was in the fitness business,
right.
I realized that, you know, just as you have a set point when it comes to weight, you must have a set point when it comes to money. And mine must be set pretty low. And so I realized that I wasn't big enough yet to hold that $1 million. I hadn't grown myself, because we're a container for our wealth. And I wasn't a big enough container yet. And so I focused on growing me, growing the container, not outside, not strategies for real estate, not strategies for business, not negotiating. Okay, that was all great, but I focused on who I was, my character, my development of my belief system, and my own mind. And when I did that, and I grew myself, just like any other container, when you grow a big container, what's going to happen? More can go into it. If you have a small container and you put millions of dollars in, what's going to happen? It overflows, right? And I guarantee there's people on this line right now, they just got the biggest hit of their life. The reason that they had money and they lost it is because the container was too small to hold the amount of money that they had. And that's what's going to happen to every single person. And that's why it's so important that you grow your container. You must grow yourself. And when you do that, you know, there's a universal law that says the universe abhors a vacuum.
Yes.
And so if you've got more space and an intention of money, the universe will rush in to fill that space.
Well, and a corollary to that, and we got about 2 minutes on this question, is one of your wealth principles in the book. And you say if you want to change the fruits, you will first have to change the roots. If you want to change the visible, you first must change the invisible. How does that relate to money?
Well, you know, one people don't realize is that we live in actually four worlds at once. We live in the mental world, the emotional world, the spiritual world, and the physical world. And what people don't really get is your physical reality is nothing more than a printout. I repeat, a printout of the other three areas. A printout of the mental, emotional, and spiritual, the invisible world. So really, it's what's under the ground that creates what's above the ground. You know, when you draw a tree, for example, you know, if you've got an orange fruit, it's because you've got orange roots. You cannot have, and if you've got lemons as growing on your fruit, you must have lemon roots. So basically, those roots will create the fruits all the time. What that means is you must work under the ground. You must work in the invisible realms, the mental, the emotional, and the spiritual, which then goes ahead and creates the physical reality when you put action to it.
Well, let's talk about internal and one of the other questions. It's question number two on page two is about wealth conditioning. At least that's what I called it because that's what made sense to me. And you really talk about three primary ways we are pre-programmed for financial failure or financial success. And then you give four specific implementational ways to interrupt those patterns for greater financial success. Let's talk about the wealth principle of thoughts leading to feelings, feelings leading to actions, and actions leading to results. You talk about verbal programming, modeling, and specific incidents. When I read this, it made so much sense to me, but it was more of the inner dialogue that I never realized. Can you just focus on that a little bit?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we talk about the three methods of conditioning because we were actually, you know, how did we get programmed? How do we get our blueprint? We were taught, you know, by the information we got from other people, you know, from parents, sibling, authority leaders, teachers, religious leaders, media, culture. You know, take culture. Isn't it true that certain cultures have a certain way of thinking dealing with money?
Absolutely.
And other cultures have a completely different way of thinking dealing with money? And let me ask you a question. Does the child come out of the womb doing it that way? Or were they taught how to do money that way? And, of course, the answer is we're all taught how to do money. You are, all the audiences, and I was. And so how are we taught? Three methods of conditioning. Verbal programming, what we heard when we were young. Modeling, what we saw when we were young. And specific incidents, what we experienced around money, success, and rich people when we were young. And by the way, Alex, this doesn't just hold true for money. This holds true for everything. You know what? It holds true for your relationships. What did you hear? What did you see when you were young? And what specific incidents occurred? So it's the same thing over and over again. Well, those are the primary ways that we actually learn about money. And so, you know, talk about verbal programming for a moment here.
Go ahead.
We take a look at them and we say, well, what were some of the phrases that you heard about money, wealth, and rich people when you were young? And, you know, most people heard phrases like money is the root of all evil, or rich people are greedy, or filthy rich, or you have to work hard to make money, or it takes money to make money, or money doesn't buy happiness. And you know, how about this one? I'm sure nobody but me ever heard this one. We can't afford it.
Right.
You know? You want to hear my father's favorite?
Sure.
Anytime I asked him for anything, he'd say, hey, what am I, made of money? And I kind of joke around with him. I go, I wish, Dad, you know, I'll take an arm or a leg. I'll take a little finger. You know what? He never laughed once. Not once. Anyways, all of the statements that you heard when you were young, every last one of them has formed a dendrite in your mind and is lodged in your subconscious mind and part of the blueprint that is actually running your financial life. The other thing you want to look at is modeling. What did you see when you were young? You know what? What were your parents or guardians like in the arena of money when you were little? Did one or both of them manage money well, or did they mismanage it? Were they spenders or were they savers? Were they shrewd investors or were they non-investors? Did money come fairly easily in your household, or was it always a struggle? Was it a source of joy or a source of bitter arguments? Why is this important? You know, a lot of people have heard the saying, monkey see, monkey what?
Do.
Yeah. And humans aren't far behind.
No.
So generally we'll tend to be, listen to this, Alex, your people really need to listen to this, because we will tend to be exactly like one or a combination of both of our parents in the arena of money. Unless we're exactly the opposite. Some of us go the opposite route. Why? Because we're rebelling. And why would someone go there? Because it depends on how angry we were at them. And so, you know, one of the things I think is on your sheet is about the story about about my wife, Rochelle.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is comes under actually specific incidents. What did you experience when you were young around money, success, and rich people? And people had all kinds of different experiences. In my seminars, people stand up and share these experiences if they choose to, and they're wild. It's unbelievable what happens. For my own wife, for example, when she was 8 years old, she would hear the clanging of the ice cream truck coming down the street, and she'd run to her mom and ask her mom for a quarter. And her mom would say, "Sorry, dear, I don't have any money. Go ask Dad. Dad's got all the money." She'd run on over to Dad. She'd get her quarter. She'd get her ice cream. She was a happy camper. The next week, she'd hear the clanging ice cream truck coming down the street. She'd run to her mom and ask her mom for a quarter. And her mom would say, "Sorry, dear, I don't have any money. Go ask Dad. Dad's got all the money." She'd run over to Dad. She'd get her quarter. She was a happy camper. Yeah? Let me ask you a question. What did my wife learn about money?
Men have money.
Exactly. Yeah, so she learned that, first of all, that men have all the money. So when we first got married, what do you think she expected of moi?
to handle all the money and for her to spend it, I guess,
yes,
right?
Yes, the supplier, right?
Right.
Dad, you know, where's my... And I'll tell you what, she it wasn't quarters anymore that she was after. Somehow she graduated with me, you know?
Right.
And then what else did she learn about money? What did she learn about men and money? She learned that men have all the money, and women don't have money, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mom, the model, the deity, didn't have money. Therefore, the way of being for a woman is not to have money. So, of course, any money she did have, she'd have to do what? She'd have to get rid of it, right? And you know what? She was pretty exact about it, too. You give her $100, she spent $100. You give her $200, she spent $200. You give her $500, she spent $500. You give her $1,000, she spent $1,000. Then she took one of my programs. She learned all about the art of leverage. You give her $2,000, she went out and spent $10,000. All I can say is that the only thing we ever fought about was money.
Yeah.
You got it.
Makes sense.
And thank goodness we learned about how to recondition, how to reset our financial thermostat, and reset them for getting along and for balance in our lives. And the most important thing about relationships, Alex, that your people need to know, the people in the audience need to know, is that what we teach people in the seminar and in the book is actually that you need to actually create a third blueprint that is a blueprint for the relationship that both parties buy into. It's almost like a corporation. You know, you have the individual, and then you have the corporation. The corporation has its own laws, policies, and you buy into those and you agree to those, yes?
Yes, absolutely.
And when those are in place, it's much, much easier. You see, my wife and I never had a fight about money, although we fought about it every day, but it wasn't us fighting. Our blueprints were having a brawl, you know?
Yeah.
They were exactly the opposite of each other. My wife, because of the ice cream thing, her meaning for money, she grew up to think that money meant joy, right, and pleasure. And I grew up with a different attitude. I grew up thinking that money means freedom, you know, security and freedom. So when I was holding her back from spending money, I wasn't holding back from spending money. I was holding her back from having pleasure in her life. And can you imagine a little bit of resentment around that one?
Just a little. And, you know, I had the same thing with my wife. And just in defense of both our wives, this is not their fault. I mean, this is at the subconscious level. One of your own wealth principles you talk about in the book is, you say, when the subconscious mind must choose between deeply rooted emotions and logic, emotions will almost always win. Isn't that what was happening with Rochelle throughout this process until you brought it to a consciousness, I guess?
Absolutely. You know, again, we run based on this conditioned process. We're, you know, I hate to say this, but we're almost robotic in nature. You know, we think we run on all these choices, but we do, but the choices were made a long time ago, and now we just fulfill those ways of being. And so, you know, literally, you know, for myself, you know, she wasn't spending our money. She was spending my freedom, you know,
right,
my future freedom. And hey, can I get a little angry about that? Of course. And so we developed this third blueprint. We changed our own blueprints. You know, I changed my blueprint from, oh, it's only about freedom, to it's pleasure and it's joy and it's in the now and it's in the future and it's all of it. And the same with her. And it's such an elegant process. We are so blessed, Alex, to be able to do this for people at the 3-day intensive. It's one of my biggest joys because, you know, we have hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of people say to us, "You know what? I used to fight about with my husband or my wife about money all the time. I've never had a single argument about money with them ever since." And the same with their boss, same with managers. It's a whole different ballgame.
Well, your book is really a how-to course. It's not really a book pontificating your beliefs or some of your experiences. It really is giving the solution and the results of those solutions. And you give these four steps throughout all the chapters. You have multiple steps, and the four basic steps that leaped out at me for every single cause for change. You call it steps for change. You talk about awareness, understanding, disassociation, and declaration. I'm interested in finding out more about those four, as well as the difference between a declaration and an affirmation, because that really made a big impact on me.
Well, you know what? That's a very good notice, because that's how people change, literally. You know, the first thing you have to do, first step of change, is you have to be aware. You have to be aware of what's going on. You know, am I doing well? Am I not doing well? What's going on here? And for example, when it comes to our beliefs, you know, the fact that I have certain beliefs, like I believe, for example, that, you know, it takes money to make money. So if someone believes that, they have to become aware that they believe that. The next step is understanding. So we say, okay, well, I believe that. Now, where did that come from? Well, hey, isn't that my grandpa who always says, hey, you know, Harv, it takes money to make money, and we ain't got none, so that's why we ain't got no money. You know, don't fool yourself here. When you have money, you can make money. Those rich people, they go ahead and make money because they got money. We don't have any money, so, hey, you know, don't get too high on yourself here. When you don't have any money, so you can't make any money. That's the way I've always found it. That's the way it is. Well, you know, you get that ingrained into you by this higher authority, and when you're, you know, 2 feet tall and they're 6 feet tall, it's a very big difference. So we have to understand that this came from outside of us. Now, once we understand that this is not us speaking here, it's not God speaking here either, then we can actually go to the next stage and we can disassociate from that way of being and go, hey, you know what? That wasn't a God speaking. That wasn't a higher authority. That was my grandpa who probably heard the same garbage from his grandpa who heard it from his grandpa. And so it's got nothing to do with me. If I want to buy into that now, great, but I don't have to buy into that anymore. That's not me. I just heard that stuff. That came into my sphere of consciousness, and I can either accept it or I can kick it out. And then the beautiful part about it is the reconditioning, the fourth stage. And this is what very few people actually do. You recondition the actual dendrites. You make changes in the actual neurological pathways in the mind with very specific, easy and fun processes that change people's lives. You know, because as I said earlier, if you see there's a way you're doing something and you recognize there's a different and better way to do it, and you're not bought into that first way anymore because you've disassociated with it, now you're open. So, for example, if you're throwing, let's say, darts, and you're throwing them underhand, and you're doing really poorly, and then some master dart thrower beside you, you know, starts throwing them overhand and hits bullseyes every time, you can, if you were bought into your underhand, you'd go, well, hey, this guy doesn't know what he's doing, and you know, still do crummy. But if you're saying, hey, you know, my dad only showed me how to do the underhand, obviously this guy's a lot better than my dad, forget the underhand, I'm going to do it like this guy does. And, you know, you held it with the two fingers, and boom, you did exactly, and hey, they start going well. Well, pretty soon, you've reconditioned your mind. You're saying, this is the way to do it now. You're teaching your mind this is how to do it. And so, really, reconditioning is a very, very important element. And in the book, the way we can recondition people is with these things called dendrites, declarations, which is something that we do at the seminar also. But at the seminar, the Millionaire Mind Intensive is actually that we do several other processes that are very, very high impact and cellular in nature. They actually reach people on a cellular basis, so the cells of memory actually change right on the spot. The dendrites, high impact dendrites, actually change right on the spot, and it becomes a path of least resistance, whereby it's actually easier for you to do it the new way than it is to do it the old way.
Well, I love that, and if you've just joined us, we're talking to Harv Eker. He is best-selling author of his latest book, Secrets of the Millionaire Mind, Mastering the Inner Game of Wealth. Stay on for the next 25 minutes. I'm going to give you a magic word. You'll send a blank email using this magic word, and you'll not only get the book for 50% off, because I've purchased a bunch of books, and that's my gift to you, but you'll also get access to 2 free tickets to the Millionaire Mind Intensive that Harv's been talking about. That is a $2,590 value. That is no joke, and that's coming up in about 25 minutes, so stay tuned. We have covered page 2 of our cheat sheet. Let's move on and take about 5 minutes to take on number 3, which I call rich thinking. And this really struck me in the book. The rich think and act differently about financial freedom than the poor and the middle class. And what's interesting to me is how you lumped the poor and the middle class together. I mean, that may take some people back because they may be middle class or think of themselves as middle class, but really rich thinking is different. Let's talk about the thrive mentality versus the survive mentality, which the poor and middle class are always victim to. What does that look like?
Well, you know, it's very simple here. Rich people are looking more for abundance. And poor people, they're looking more to the survival mechanism. Everything is about security, survival. You know, later on, we wanted to talk about the process where we talk about how rich people play to win and poor people play not to lose. Now, we can talk about this later or we can get into it right now, whatever your choice is.
Let's start it right now because I think it's very appropriate for people listening.
I think it's very appropriate, too, because this is the way most people play the money game. They play the money game on defense versus offense. And, Alex, let me ask you a question. Any game you play strictly on defense, what are your chances of actually winning that game?
Nil. I used to be a professional athlete, and any time I was defensive, I always lost. 100% of the time.
There you go. And that's the way most poor and middle-class people play. Poor people, these play that way for sure. Their big way of playing their concern is about survival and security. You know, what's your goal? What's your objective? What's your intention? You know, poor people's big intention is to have enough to pay the bills. On time would be a miracle, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know what, Alex? Just by the power of the laws of intention in the universe, if your intention is to have enough to pay the bills, that's exactly what you're going to get and not a dime more. You know, now let's talk about middle-class people. Because middle-class people, you know, their big intention is also their favorite word in the whole wide world because they just want to be what? Comfortable.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
Right. Just I want to be comfortable. You know what? That's what I found out myself. I found out there's a big difference between comfortable and really frickin' rich, okay? Big difference. And so as per the law of attention, if your intention is to be comfortable, I want the audience now to really, really, all the listeners to get this real straight. My friends, if your intention is to be comfortable, you will never, ever, ever, ever get rich. Never. Never. Why? It's very simple. Because rich and comfortable are very different. They're different energies. And if all you can muster up is comfortable energy, you're in trouble, at least when it comes to wealth. And I hate to be so blunt about it, but the way I figure is simply this. If your intention is to be rich and you get there, you're going to end up mighty comfortable. So you want to be comfortable, why not get rich? There's a saying we use in the seminars all the time. It says this. If you shoot for the stars, you're at least going to hit the moon. Most people don't even shoot for the ceiling in their house, and they wonder what's going on.
They don't even hit the couch, right?
Not even. So let me say this right now to everybody. Right now, have some homework for everybody, if it's
okay. Go ahead.
I want everyone on this call right now to create a strategy to actually go out and help 10 times as many people as they're already helping right now with their product or service. What do I mean by that? One of the things we talk about in the book is the definition of an entrepreneur. And an entrepreneur is nothing more than a person who solves problems for people at a profit. And you know what? It's the same when you have a job. You're solving a problem for the business owner. You're solving a problem for the customer. And so you're just a problem solver, right? And so that's how you make money, by solving problems for people. Now, I want you to solve problems for 10 times as many people, or 10 times the problem for the same amount of people. And so what you have to do is you have to put out more value. And people say, well, what do you mean by that? Well, I mean, if you're a massage therapist and you're serving, you know, 6 people a day, you've got to figure out a way to serve 60 people a day. Hey, Harv, I would need 80 arms to serve 60 people a day. Well, that's right. That's why you've got to create a strategy. That's why you've got to use some leverage. That's why you've got to use some creativity to make a lot more money. That's a myth I want to jump into right now. Most people think it takes money to make money. That's BS. It's crap. It doesn't hold water at all. You know what? If you throw money at a problem, you're still going to have the problem, aren't you, Alex? You've probably experienced that yourself. The only way to make money, it's not money that makes money. It's you need creativity to make money, as evidenced by the thousands and thousands of immigrants that have come to this country with absolutely nothing, no money whatsoever. And a few years later, they're in action, they're successful, they are financially free. How does that happen? It's not by money making money, it's by creativity. Having a good idea and being willing to act on it, being willing to do whatever it takes, being willing to work the 20 hours or the 25 hours in a day if you have to, doing what it takes. And you know what? that's not about being comfortable.
Well, listen, I'm reading one of the, actually, Wealth File number one in your book. It really relates to this because of the thinking differences between the rich, the poor, and the middle class. You say, rich people believe I create my life, which is really being an entrepreneur, whereas poor and middle class people believe life happens to me. Can you talk about that just for about a minute so everyone can understand what you mean by it?
Well, absolutely. And again, it's for entrepreneurs and it's for people in jobs. Whatever your situation is, you have to take full responsibility for where you are right now in your life, financially especially. You know, if you're doing very well, take responsibility for that. If you're doing poorly, say, I'm doing poorly and I take responsibility for it. You are the one who creates your life. Consciously or unconsciously, it's still you. But you know what? Instead of doing that, most poor and middle class people, they decide to play the role of a victim. And you can always tell a victim because they leave three indelible clues. And I see that this is in your sheet. Is it okay if we talk about
that? Absolutely. Go for it.
So the first clue is they blame, of course. They blame the economy. They blame their type of business. They blame the stock market, the real estate market, the city they live in. They blame the government, the taxes, their employer. They blame their upline, their downline. They blame everything. They blame their husband, their wife. And, of course, everybody wants to blame their parents, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And let me interrupt you quickly. For everyone following along, this is number four. Harv is going straight into a money victim. And these are the three clues or habits he's talking about. So we're on blame. Go ahead, Harv.
Absolutely. So it's always something else or it's always someone else that's to blame. Or they do the second one. They justify their situation by saying something like, well, you know, money's not really important. Let me ask you a question. If you said that your husband or your wife or your boyfriend or your girlfriend wasn't really important, would they be around for very long? I don't think so, and neither would money. You know what? People come up to me all the time in the Millionaire Mind Intensive Seminar at a break, and they'll go, you know, Harv, money's not that important. I go, really? Would you like some coaching? And they go, yeah. I go, you're broke. You're broke, aren't you? And they go, well, right now I'm a little short. I go, no, not right now. You've always been broke. Yes or yes? And they go, of course they're broke. Alex, it makes no sense. If you didn't think that having a motorcycle was important, would you go buy one? Would you have one?
Right.
Of course not. If you don't think having a pet parrot is important to you, would you buy one? Would you have one? Of course not. If you don't think money's important, would you have any? Of course not. You know, you can actually dazzle your friends with this information. You know, next time, you know, you're with a friend of yours and they say something like that, like that money's not important, put your hand on your forehead, look up to the heavens and go, and then just pause for a second and go, you're broke.
Right.
And they're going to go, how did you know? And you're going to look back up into the heavens with your hand on your forehead and you go, what else do you want to know? That'll be $50, please. And you're in a whole new business now, you know?
Well, let me tell you, not only do I know, but I raised the level of my net worth. In fact, I tripled it the moment I got of my sphere of influence of people. That included family and friends who came to me and kept saying, you know, I know you're really going for money, but money isn't that important, Alex. And that kept bringing me down. I couldn't figure out why. And the moment I severed those ties and I knew that they wouldn't support me, all of a sudden my net worth tripled. And it happened within a year. So you're spot on that. And I did that recently after reading the book on one of the pages. I read that you had suggested that, and it works. I mean, it absolutely is true. Anyone who says money is not important, they are near broke or absolutely broke.
Yeah,
or
they can't have any.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, if you said your pants aren't important, I guess you'd walk out without pants. Hello?
Right.
It's very simple here. And the third thing that people do is the victims do is they complain. And, you know, and let me say this right now. Complaining is the absolute worst thing you can do for your health or your wealth. The worst. One of our other programs is called the Wizard Training. And in that training, we teach a principle that I'm sure everybody has heard before. And the principle is this. What I focus on expands. I'm going to say it again. What I focus on expands. So when you are complaining, what are you focusing on? What's right with your life or what's wrong with your life? When you're complaining, you're focusing on what's wrong with your life. And since what you focus on expands, you get more of what's wrong with your life. When you are complaining, Alex, when a person is complaining, you know, you are becoming, you are attracting crap into your life. When you're complaining, you become this big, giant, human crap magnet.
Right.
You know, and isn't it funny?
It's a principle. It's a principle. It sure is gravity. It's a principle, isn't it?
If you notice, don't you notice that complainers usually have a crappy life?
Yeah.
And they go, well, of course I complain. Look how crappy my life is. And now you know better, so you can say, no, it's because you complain that your life is so crappy. Shut up and don't stand near me.
Yeah, and if anyone who's listening doesn't believe Harv, just look for a rich victim. They don't exist. There's no such thing. Would you agree, Harv?
Well, who's going to listen to him anyways complaining, oh, I got a scratch in my yacht? As in, anybody cares? I mean, shut up. Who cares, right?
Right.
So I have some homework for everybody on the line again. Here it is. No complaining for 7 days. No complaining, not even out of your mouth, and not even in your thoughts. And when you can do that for 7 days, I promise you, your life will be miraculous is the best word I could describe, okay? At least you won't be attracting crap into your life. Neutral is good for most people, right?
Absolutely.
And you know what? It's got to be for a whole 7 days, Alex. You want to know why? Because they might still have some residual crap coming to them from before. You know, because crap doesn't travel at the speed of light. You know, it travels at the speed of crap, and it's really slow. So it's got to be a whole 7 days.
Let me tell you, it is not easy to do this. So you may be smiling. You may be laughing. You may be even skeptical from what you're hearing. But let me tell you, try not to complain for 7 days. It is difficult. Try not blaming or justifying for 7 days. It is very, very difficult. Go for it. It's a challenge. You will change your life. You're 7 days away from changing your financial thermostat and your money blueprint. All you got to do...
I love that you said that. You know why? Spoken like a person who's tried it. Because it's like you said, all the principles that I teach are very, very simple, but they make such a dramatic difference in people's lives. Like you said, go out and try and not complain for a week and see how you do. You know, it's the first day. It's like, oh, God, you know, geez, I'm getting a little tired here. Wow, I'm, you know, oh, my God, I did it again.
Right.
That's the 48th time this minute.
And when you notice it, you'd be shocked at what other people have been hearing all along, you know?
Listen to other people. You'll actually die of listening to how many people, all they do is complain. How's your day going? Oh, it's all right. What's going on? Oh, my mother is calling. Okay, great. You know what? I listen to complainers for I have a rule. I will listen to a complainer for exactly 1 nanosecond. As soon as I hear the C word, I'm out of there. I'm not interested in people bringing my energy down. You know why, Alex? This is not even on the sheet, but let me say this very quickly. A lot of money, wealth, is a lot of money. Everything is energy, and a lot of money is a lot of energy. And that means it takes a lot of energy to create a lot of money and to have a lot of money and keep a lot of money. That takes energy. You don't need anybody else bringing down your energy. Stay away from them.
That is so true, and otherwise we become one of them, as I have, and it's tough to get rid of that skin. It's tough to get rid of those clothes because they just stick to you like super glue. Let's move on to page 4. If you're with us on the cheat sheet, we're going to move on to what I call the prosperity focus. And let me tell you, I read one of the wealth principles that you'd written down in the book. And I'm talking about Secrets of the Millionaire Mind, if you just joined us, Harv's new book. And there are 19 words. They're very simple, and I've been quoting this ever since I read it. And I'm being honest with you, and I'm being as sincere and as authentic as I'm sitting here right now, because this is, to me, the holy grail of what living is all about as far as business, as far as money, as far as happiness. And here it is. Here's the wealth principle. It's very simple, but remember it. The number one reason most people don't get what they want is that they don't know what they want. And the rich know what they want. Poor and middle class don't. Let's spend about 10 minutes about this and tell us the differences of what happens when you know what you want and you're like a laser heat-seeking missile, kind of like a pilot knowing exactly where he or she's going to land, versus someone who's just treading water out there wondering, okay, what next? What's going to happen to me? Let's talk about this.
Well, you know, that's a really great point, because that is, like they say, you say, the number one rule. Most people, they don't get what they want because they don't know what they want. And, you know, that creates a lot of confusion in people. There's a saying, and if people have a pencil right now, they should write this down. And that is, it's a formula, and that is that clarity leads to power. I'm going to repeat it again. Clarity leads to power. And people say, what about power? Well, what is the definition of power? The definition of power is the ability to act or the ability to do. that's what power is. Just like your car or a horse, right? It's power, okay? The ability to do. So clarity leads to the ability to do. And the number one reason people don't do much, they don't act a lot, is because they're unclear of what they want. One day they want this, the next day they want that. You know, the first day they want to be rich, the next day they you know, in their subconscious mind says, rich people are greedy, I don't want to do that, so I don't want to be really rich. And the universe is going, what the heck do you want? What do you want me to bring you here? You know, the universe, Alex, is like a mail order department. You give it an order, it's going to come, as long as you're very clear. You can't give the universe an order that says, I want wealth, but I don't want to be greedy, and rich people are greedy, so I want wealth, but I don't want to be greedy, and at the same time, you know, it's not spiritual to be wealthy, and yet I want wealth, and so it's very good to have money, but not if you're going to, you know, screw other people's lives with it, and of course rich people do that, so, you know, I don't want, and the universe going, what are you talking about? Tell me what you want! And they'll get it. And so that's the problem people have. They give all these mixed messages, not only to their own brain, but to the universe. They don't really know what they want. They don't know what they want in business. They know what they want in life. They're not sure of this. They're not sure of that. And you know, it's very important that you make decisions. That's one of the hardest things. You talk about not complaining about that, that being difficult. Making a decision to kill off decidra. The decision comes from the Latin word decidua, which means to kill off the other choices. It's very hard for people to kill off other choices. Why? Because people are so afraid of making a mistake. And you know what? That's the thing you have to do that's different than rich people and poor and middle-class people. Rich people are willing to make a decision, and they're slow to change it, and they're quick to take action on it. And poor people, they take forever to make a decision, and they're very slow to move on it and very quick to change on it. And so I have a little practice I'd like to offer all of our audience here today, and that is this. The faster you can make decisions, the better off you'll be. And practice doing that to the best of your ability. You'll get good at it. Here's one thing that I practice. When I was broke, I was a poor decision maker. And when I got to be a good decision maker, things started to happen for me. That's part of the blueprint. And one of the things I practiced was, I used to go into restaurants, and I would look at the menu, and I'd say, do I want that? I think I'll have that. No, maybe I'll have this. I'm not sure what I want. And I would really take the longest at the table, a good 7, 8, 9 minutes to choose what I wanted to eat. You know what? That was a poor way. That was a habit. And that spilled over to every other part of my life. You know what I started training myself to do? I pick up the menu. I give myself 10 seconds for everything. What to drink, what's dessert, what I want for appetizer. Boom, boom, boom. I want this, this, this. And I even know that even now before I walk in. And you know what? The confidence that can, training can have in somebody, even though it's just with a menu, you go, but what if I want something else? There you go. Made a mistake. Oh my God, what if I made a mistake? Don't worry about it. Enjoy what you've got, right? Make a decision, live with it, and make it work. Very simple.
Well, and you talk about commitment a lot in the book and the warrior's way, and you talk about that you make these declarations, I will be rich or I will die trying. And one of your wealth principles is if you're not fully, totally, and truly committed to create wealth, chances are you won't be. And a lot of people are afraid of those commitments and decisions, just like picking up a book and doing a little bit of change, going to a Millionaire Mind Intensive and changing the way they think and wondering what people are going to think when they come back. But decision-making is not only for the wealthy. When you cut off all alternatives, like Julius Caesar burned all the ships behind him in one of his battles, you have no choice, die or win. And so talk about true commitment. What have you seen in a lot of your students? You've had over 250,000 of them. How do you know when someone is truly committed to live abundantly and think like the rich?
They're rich.
The result,
that's
right?
The easiest way to tell you. You know, it's real simple. The results speak for themselves. I'm a very, very easy read there, Alex. You know, I'm a totally result-oriented person. And you know what? You know, your results speak volumes. One of my Zen teachers, you know, and I have this very interesting dichotomy about me. I'm, you know, very street smart, what people say, and that's why people say I'm a cross between Donald Trump and Deepak Chopra or Buddha or something, because I have this whole Zen philosophy that I've learned. I was going to be a Zen monk, right? And then I went to this whole wealth thing here, and this cross between them is this beautiful blend that I'm now able to embrace. But, you know, you know, results talk. You know, talk is really cheap, and you know, your results speak volumes. So, you know, you don't, my Zen teacher also used to say to me, Harv, don't listen to what you think, and definitely don't listen to what you say. Watch what you do and watch your results. That'll tell you everything you need to know about yourself. And so, you know, rich people, you're right, are definitely committed to creating success, definitely committed to creating abundance and wealth. And poor people, well, they just want it, you know, as if it happens to me, it'll be nice. If it falls on my head, I'll take it. You know, if it's convenient and comfortable enough, I'll go ahead and get rich too. But you know what, Alex? I think you know as well as anybody else, it's not always a stroll in the park. You know, there's plenty of issues, challenges, and problems along the way of any type of success. And that's in, and I'd rather have those problems, by the way, than the problem of being broke any day.
Yeah, me
so
too.
People say, oh, there's so many problems associated with money and trying to create wealth, and you're going to have employees, you're going to have this. You know what? That's all fine and dandy. I would rather take that than be broke any day of the week. And so you're right. Commitment is critical, because you know what? I want the audience to write this down again. The definition of commitment is to devote oneself unreservedly. The key word is unreservedly, with nothing held back. Like you said, the Mongolian warriors, what they would do is they would go into battle and they would bring all of their belongings and their children and their wives with them right behind them, so that if they failed, the entire society would be wiped out. Failure is not an option. Mediocrity is not an option. And only success is the only thing that is possible to live with here. And that's the warrior's way. It is a one-focus, one-mind way. People are going to go, well, you know, you're making it sound like there's nothing else important in life. No, I'm not making that sound that at all. Look, money does what money does. When you do money, do money. When you work, work. When you play, play. When you love, love. You know, do everything at 100%. That's the warrior's way.
Well, amen to that. And when you experience it, you know you're there. When you don't, you know you're there. And before we move on to the sixth question on page 4, called Debt Elimination, why are rich people more successful when dealing with debt than poor middle class? Because we all get into debt, but how do rich people handle it? I want to give out the magic word. I want to give out 5 minutes early because everyone's been patient. When you use this magic word, you will get back an email, and that email will have a special link on it. That special link will take you to a page that will give you access, private access, to get Harv's new book, Secrets of the Millionaire Mind, which he's already sold thousands of and the bookstores barely have it. You'll get it for 50% off as a gift from me. I would recommend you buy two of them. That may allow less people to get it, but get two of them, because I firmly believe that you need to have one for Harv to sign when you go to the Millionaire Mind Intensive Seminar. And number two, give it to a friend, loved one, or anyone who you think will give you a little bit of resistance. And let them sneak reading it. Just give it to them and let them read it. And they will support you when you get back from the seminar. So here's the magic word. Here's all you have to do. Type in a blank email. So in the to column of an email, just, you're not going to a website, just send a blank email and title it Millionaire. That's M-I-L-L-I-O-N-A-R-E. You better know how to spell it if you're going to become one. Millionaire at askharvecker.com. Harv Eker is H-A-R-V-E-K-E-R. Send a blank email, and it's to millionaire at askharv, H-A-R-V-E-K-E-R, Eker.com. And in the subject line, put, I want to become a millionaire. Just write that in. That's a nice declaration. And then say it. And then you will get back almost instantly an email that will give you a special link. Go ahead and get the book. If you're not part of the first 250, then I apologize in advance. If you are, congratulations. And hopefully we will see you at one of the Millionaire Mind Intensives in an area near you. Let's move on to page 4 at the bottom, number 6. We're calling it debt elimination. Debt is huge, especially with all the credit cards that's out these days. Credit card companies actually like to put us in debt, or so we think. But you say that rich people are bigger than their problems, and I'm going to put their debts, whereas poor people are not. That's one of the declarations you make in the book. What do you mean by that specifically?
Well, there's two things we're talking about here. The first thing is, if we're talking about debt specifically, then what we really need to talk about is money management. And, you know, one of the biggest differences between rich people and most other people is that rich people manage their money very well. And if they don't have time to manage it for themselves, they get other people to manage it. And poor people and middle class people, they generally mismanage their money. And one of the reasons that people have debt is because they mismanage the money that they earn. Everybody earns some money. The only question is, what are you doing with it and how are you handling it? At the Millionaire Mind Intensive Seminar in the book, we actually give people very specific ways of managing their money, handling their money in such a way, an easy, elegant, and simple way that, you know, debt becomes something that is just non-existent anymore, and it's very easy to get out of it because we have a specific methodology for getting out of the debt using the money management system. We actually have a certain amount of money each month that goes to the debt elimination. However, it's different than what Susie Orman and everybody else tells you to do, in that everybody says the first thing you should do is take all of your money that you have and throw it into eliminating your debts, because you got to get away from those crazy credit card rates and all the other stuff. And you know what? I beg to differ, because money management is the way out. You've got to have the habit of managing your money properly. And part of that is the debt, but not all of it. Because if you just take all your money and throw it back and throw it into eliminating your debt, guess what's going to happen? Nothing. You're going to end up with you're going to eliminate it for exactly a week, and you're going to go back to the exact same habits you had that created the debt in the first place, aren't you?
Absolutely.
And so what I suggest is that you learn how to manage your money properly. Debt elimination is a part of that, but there are many other parts of it that are in the book, and you want to learn that directly at the seminar, the Millionaire Mind Intensive. So that's the first thing. Don't just eliminate a debt. Instead of focusing on the negative, focus on the positive, and focus on managing your money properly so that you never have a debt problem again for as long as you live. That way you solve the problem, you don't cover it up. The second thing you were talking about is, absolutely, rich people are bigger than their problems.
Yes.
Poor people are smaller than their problems. And rich people understand that it's not the size of the problem that matters, it's the size of you. You know, that's why successful people grow themselves to be bigger than any problem that can prevent them from creating success. And you know what? From keeping it once they have it. And poor people, what do? They try to avoid problems at all costs. And some problems are part of the journey of success. They end up avoiding success. So again, you have to grow yourself. You have to, you know, one of the sayings we talk about at the seminar all the time is that if you're not growing, you're automatically what? Dying. Because we're in energy, right? And so any living organism, you know, if you're not sure of that, then just, you know, do you have a plant at home or a flower? If your flower is not growing, what's it doing? It's dying, okay, one way or the other. And it's the same with us. And that's why you have to constantly learn and grow. You have to grow yourself to be a very big person so that no matter what happens in your life, you are bigger than any problem. And let me give you a little hint there. If people say to them, if they look at a situation and go, oh, my God, this is such a big problem, all you're saying is that you're very little right now in comparison to that problem. So you have to put the focus where the focus needs to be, and that's on you. Because the only way that that problem is going to be solved is if you are bigger than it. And you can say, you know what, that's a problem, but it's not bigger than me. I'm going to be bigger than it. I am going to respond in a way that works to the best I can, and I will handle it. Now, if you do that with every problem, Alice, what's going to happen? You won't be afraid of problems. You'll be able to walk into bigger and bigger and bigger situations that will allow you to earn more and more and bigger money.
Well, and you just gingerly step over them. They're not roadblocks anymore. They're stepping stones. And, you know, it just occurred to me, you mentioned some money management gurus out there that talk about eliminating debt. And I guess partly is because they don't want people to pay interest. But there's a much deeper psychological impact of that. Is, you know, when I tried to eliminate my debt, I had a huge business failure about 11 years ago. And my whole focus is listening to those gurus, eliminate debt first. And I had such pain associated with money management, in effect, eliminating debt, that I refuse to do it. But your system, and we don't have time to go into it, you teach it at the Millionaire Mind Intensive, you actually have a small percentage that you tell people just go out and have fun with. And I've never heard anyone else talk about that. You want to just harp on that just a little bit?
You know, Alice, you got a right hand and a left hand, a right leg and a left leg. We got two sides to ourselves. You know, you're going to be lopsided and imbalanced if you only play with your left side. And it's the same thing with your brain. You have a logical side, you have a creative side. And it's the same with money. You have to have a part of you, a part of your life is saving money for financial freedom, and investing that money and making your money work for you, and that's a very big part. But on the other side, you actually have to have, what we suggest is you have a play account, where you actually have money set aside, a specific and designated amount that you set aside every month to just splurge on yourself and maybe your loved ones. And do things that you would not even normally dream of doing, and allow yourself to have that millionaire energy, that millionaire mind. You know, a good example is, I had a friend visit me a little while ago, and he had taken the program recently, and he goes, you know, what's one of the biggest things that's changed for me is I've got this play account, Harv, and I you know, we go back from kindergarten. He says, I want to take you out. He says, well, let's do something special this afternoon. He says, what do you want to do? So we was in Vancouver, Canada. I said, well, I don't know. It's a beautiful day. What do you want? He says, I want to be by the water. We go down to the water. We see these boat rental places. He says, let's rent a boat. You know, I've got $250 in my play account. I want to blow it all. Be a million. Let's rent the boat for the whole day. We can rent one of these little fishing boats here, and we can. It's a, you know, a 20-horsepower a motor. Let's go around the lake for the day, and we'll have a great time. I said, that's great if you want to do that, but you know, the intention of this account is for you to feel like a millionaire. I said, what's wrong with that yacht over there? And he goes, the yacht? Are you kidding me? Who's going to give us that for $200? And so I went into the office. I found out the yacht belongs to the owner of the whole marina. And I said, listen, how much is it going to cost to rent that yacht? He says, it's not for rent. I said, listen, I got a friend here. I got to take him out. How much is it going to cost? He says, well, how long can I get for $200? He says, for $200, you can get 5 minutes. I said, I'll take it. Because I would rather have 5 minutes on a yacht, you know, that costs $4 million, than 2 hours in a little dinky fishing boat, okay? And so my friend, we get it behind this yacht, and sure enough, the guy comes on the yacht. He wouldn't let us do it by himself, and he brings his work with him. He brings his laptop, and sure enough, my friend's behind the wheel of this yacht. He is in heaven. This guy is 6 inches taller than when he stepped on the yacht. Guess what, Alex? The guy let us take it around for 2 hours. That's what happens when you are willing to really go for it. The universe begins to help you in ways you have never would have thought of before.
And, you know, you associate fun with managing money, and you end up becoming rich. It makes all the sense in the world. And just
hey,
a
if
lot
you're
of
not having fun, how long are you going to manage your money
that's
for?
That's it. That's it. I mean,
you'll stop.
They'll just stop doing it. I know I did. Let's move on to number 7, and that is measuring wealth. By the way, if you're sending emails to millionaire@askharvecker.com, remember it's askharvecker.com. If you'd like to go after the call and go online and see that offer, it's at askharvecker.com/special offer. You'll see a special link. You'll see a little arrow moving and pointing. Click that button, and you will get the book at a steeply discounted price as a gift. Now let's go to measuring wealth. It's on the final page, page 5. And this really struck me because it's so true. I belong to a health club, and it's a little bit ritzy. It's in downtown San Francisco. And the rich who have that private room, you know, with their own little lockers. I'm not in that room yet, but, you know, they're over there. And all they talk about is net worth. Now, why do the rich focus on net worth while you say the poor middle class focus on their income or monthly income? What's the psychological impact of this?
Well, because, you know, the net worth is the true measure of wealth. It's not about income, because income comes and goes, doesn't it? But net worth is really how much, you know, you're financially worth. And so, you know, one of the biggest differences is that, you know, poor people always think about how much, you know, how much do you earn? What's the big question in our society? How much do you make?
Yeah.
And you know, rich people don't say, how much do you make? They say, what are you worth? You know, well, Joe sold his company last week, and he's worth $8 million, and Sue just got a big bonus, and she's worth, you know, $2 million, and Jim just sold his real estate portfolio. He's worth $19 million. You know, and like you say, in the country clubs, that's what they talk about all the time. They don't talk about hey, did you hear that Bob got a raise? You know, it doesn't fit. That's how poor people talk. The reason I'm bringing this up is because there are four basic elements to net worth, and there's only one basic element to working income. So working income is just working income. But that doesn't create any lasting worth, any lasting wealth. That's not wealth, that's just income. Now, when it comes to wealth, there's other elements that are important. yes, working income is very important part of it. So income's a part of it. But also, saving your money, keeping some of it, that's another part of it. That's another factor of wealth. And then you've got passive income. That's another factor of wealth. And finally, you've even got something called simplification. And what I talk about with that is that, hey, you know what? On your road to wealth, don't go berserk. You're going to have a very specific account for playing, but you know, you got a balance here, and we're going to show you how to do that. And so you want to have that opportunity to have a beautiful life, but you know, you're going to get to financial freedom a lot faster if you don't have to buy the yacht on day one and blow your money on going to Hawaii at the ritziest place, you know, that you possibly can when you can't afford it yet. So you want to get there first. So what we say really is, if you can simplify your life just a little bit on your route to getting there, you're just going to get there a lot faster. If you don't want to do that, you don't have to. But literally, rich people think net worth. How much is your assets minus your liabilities? Poor people, all they think about is, hey, how much do you make? And you know what? And in the end, they don't say what your debt is. They don't say that you're worth, you know, minus $3,000. It's just, how much do you make? And that just doesn't cut it.
Well, examples of simplification, Ross Perot, Sam Walton, these people led very simple lives, multi-billionaires, and they made it work, and they're very good examples of that one principle. Going back to your book, the title, Secrets of the Millionaire Mind, isn't focusing on net worth what you mean by millionaire? Is it $1 million a year income when you talk about a millionaire, or are you really talking about net worth? What's the answer to that?
Secrets of the Millionaire Mind means exactly what millionaire means, which is your net worth is at least $1 million. And you know, when I look back at that now, when, as I said, my first time I became a millionaire, I lost it very quickly. And doing this work, I've not only gained it back, but people ask me all the time, Harv, are you really a millionaire? And I go, no, I'm not a millionaire. You know, I'm a multi, and multiply by that by about 17 or 20, and you got that. I'm a multi-millionaire now, and it's because of this work. It's this way of thinking, this way of doing things that really works in the real world. And Alex, we are so blessed. This is my mission. This is my dharma, to be able to do this for people and give back, not in the, you know, esoteric sense of, oh, I really want to give back to society. I don't really think that way. What I think is, this is what I'm supposed to do. You know, the Great Spirit graced me. I was one of these people that was so frustrated. I actually made a declaration, Alex, you won't believe it. I said, God help me. And people have said this before. God help me. If I can somehow get rich, I promise I will help other people do the same. And I made this vow. I don't know where it came from. I just made this vow. We've all done this, you know, help me get out of this spot, and I promise I'll do it. And that's what I made. I made a declaration to God. And I got rich very, very quickly and in doing this, and it's just maintained and grown, and I'm just one of the most blessed people on this planet, and I am lucky enough to now keep my promise, and that's why I'm so fervent about this. I have a promise, a vow I made to the universe, and it's my job to keep it, and I cannot tell you how many people's lives, and you don't, and people say, well, is this for broke people? Of course not. This is for everyone who wants to reach their full financial potential. If you're broke and you want to go to $100,000 a year, that's you. If you're, you know, in the middle ranges, you're earning $50,000 or $100,000, you want to earn $500,000 or $1 million a year, that's you. If you're already earning $1 million a year, if you're already a millionaire, what's wrong with $2, $5, $10, $20 million? People go, well, why would somebody need $20 million? Hey, you know what? You should sit in the first row of this program, because you need it. Because anybody who says that has got a broke mind, not a wealthy mind. As I said before, if you have the wherewithal to have a lot of money, then you know what? By gosh, have it. Why? Because then you can contribute even more to other people and more to other people's lives and do more beautiful and more grand things in this world.
Well, it's like one of the wealth principles, again, that goes back into your book. The habit of managing money is more important than the amount that's being managed. So, you know, I was talking to Mark Victor Hansen the other day, and we were talking about tithing and giving 10%. And, you know, oftentimes a lot of us say, well, you know, if we make $1 million, we'll give 100,000. Well, if you make a buck and you're not giving 10 cents, you're not going to give 100,000 when you make a million. I mean, the habit starts at a very low level. Would you agree?
You got it. And that's not just for tithing. That's for your play account, for your financial freedom account. That's for your long-term savings account. That's for your necessities account, all the things that we teach in our money management system.
Okay, well, there's something, we got about 2 minutes left. There's something that's deep under our hides because we do come from a very entrepreneurial, as Americans, we come from an entrepreneurial heritage. A lot of people came through Ellis Island. I know my relatives did. And part of that mentality is, you know, you can have your cake and eat it too. Yet you say just the opposite. You say rich people feel that they can have their cake and eat it too, that they can enjoy their abundance. Why don't you take us out with what's left, about 3 minutes, and talk a little bit about that, because I think it really ties the knot on what we've been talking about the previous 70 minutes.
You know what, Alex? That is so blatant in our society, so pervasive. You know, let me say it this way. One of the principle number 12 in the book, you know, we talk about all the time in the course, is that one of the differences between rich people and poor middle-class people is that rich people think both, while poor people think either or. And what that means is that, As in, I'm either spiritual or I'm rich, or I'm kind and generous or I'm rich, or money's not important or as in love. And all these, again, are scarcity thinking. And you know, it's ridiculous to think this way, because one of the things that happened for me, as I said, I was studying to be a Zen monk. And what happened for me is when I got this hit that I could actually embrace both sides of myself, that I could be very spiritual and very kind and very generous and really freaking rich, okay? And when I embraced that, it's like the universe just shone on me. And I really believe everyone is like that. And my thoughts are that if I could be a model for anybody, it would be that. I would be left to be a model known as a person who's very, very kind, very generous, very big contributor, and really, 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 really rich. Both. You understand? Both. And so, yeah. People say, you can't have your cake and eat it too. Alex, I am not a violent person, but if I was going to shoot anybody, it would be the person who made up that stupid, stupid statement. You can't have your cake and eat it too. What on earth is the use of having cake if you're not going to eat it?
Hey,
what are you supposed to do with it?
You're broke, right?
Stick it on your mantelpiece or something? Come on. You know what? Let me say this. Cake is meant to be eaten. Rich people believe that you can have your cake and eat it too. Middle class people believe cake is too rich, so I'm going to only have a little piece. And poor people believe they don't deserve to have cake, so they order this donut, they focus on the hole in the middle, and they wonder why they have nothing.
Well, you've been hitting one out of the park all evening. 70 minutes with Harv Eker, author of Secrets of the Millionaire Mind, Mastering the Inner Game of Wealth. Get your hands on this book. Get two copies, one for a loved one and one for you to take up to Harv, have him hand sign it himself at one of the Millionaire Mind Intensives at an area near you. You get two free tickets, or get access to two free tickets as a special bonus from Harv, so you can get into that seminar. It's worth $2,590, but you have to decide to buy the book. And it's now easier than ever. Just send a blank email to millionaire@askharvecker.com, HARVEKER.com, or you can just go to www.askharvecker.com/special offer. Harv, we got 30 seconds. Any final words for tonight?
Well, I don't know if you're limiting them to two books, but I can tell you that my students, the people who know me, are buying 10, 20, 50, 100 books at a shot. I have people buying 1,000 books. Why? Because they have so many people that they want to offer this to, they want to give this to, people that they care about, people that they love. And you know what? The availability of those two tickets right now, I'd love for people to pay $1,295 a shot to go, but now they can go two tickets, and they get them for free for $19.95, and you've got a special offer that I can't even believe that you're doing. So, you know, take advantage of this is all I can say, and be there. Experience this, a phenomenal event. The book is amazing. It'll change people's lives, but the event itself, we actually can change people's financial thermostat right on the spot, right there. They walk out with a completely different financial blueprint, and they're ready to have automatic and natural success. Their dendrites, their neurological pathways are actually reset for success, and it comes so much easier than when they were struggling before. It's a gift to be able to do this for people. It's a blessing. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, and I'll tell you why I'm doing this, because when I changed my beliefs about money, and when my wife changed her beliefs about money, then we're in the position to teach our kids who are 2 and 4 ages that they won't have the same upbringing we did. And it wasn't our parents' fault. It's just they were, it was the way they were brought up. And then they were brought up by great-grandparents and so on and so forth. I wanted to stop that disease. And this book is a simple book. I've read a lot of books about money, but this book kind of puts it together, the inner and outer game of wealth. And frankly, after reading it in one sitting, I thought, wow, that was simple. Let me do it again. And then I read it again. I handed it to my wife, and I highlighted certain pages. I'm serious. Get the book, read it, and see that if it doesn't change your life, put it under your pillow and sleep. I mean, by osmosis, it may have an impact, but get to a Millionaire Mind Intensive and see if that one event won't change the way you think about money. At least you have a formula right now. Harv has given you a challenge for the next 7 days. You are 7 days away of not blaming, justifying, or complaining, and that alone will put you in the position to change your beliefs about money. So this is Alex Mondoshian, and I want to thank you for personally joining us for this call. Again, you can get access to Secrets of the Millionaire Mind, Mastering the Inner Game of Wealth, by sending a blank email to millionaire@askharvecker.com or by going to www.askharvecker.com/special offer. T. Harv Eker, thank you very much for joining us, and I hope our paths cross again.
Alex, thank you so much for having me with your wonderful, wonderful audience.
Okay, thank you. Good night, everybody.